Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
I've gotten thousands upon thousands of letters, you know, from people telling me, God, you've taught me this, and you've made our love life so much better. And this isn't, you know, go out and have sex with 10 million people and, you know, how to get a girl off. It's about how to get your wife off. You know, if only, you know, people could have been doing this before, we could have saved a million relationships. You know, I've saved thousands. I only am who I am because I was born that way. I have a gift, and I am trying to not be selfish about it, but to use it, okay? And if you want to knock me for that, it's your own problem, okay? Jealousy will get you nowhere. I'm gonna keep rocking on.
For Dirk Diggler, the future is something to look forward to, not to fear. He is a creative man of many interests. Film, poetry, karate, music, and dance. He is a man of passion and mystery. He is a man of lust.
You got the touch. You got the power. Yeah. After all is said and done, you never walk, you never run. You're a winner. You got to move, you know the streets. Break the rules, take the heat. You're nobody's fool. You're at your best when the going gets rough. You've been put to the test, but it's never enough. You got the touch.
You think the bass is taken away from the vocal?
Hello to you. It is 10 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of June in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming by and making this part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Looming high above the milk packing district in beautiful Southeast Portland, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an excursion into amusements of all varieties. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, bringing you yet another jam-packed episode filled to the brim with diversions and entertainment of every manner, shape, function, and form. If you'd like to be part of today's program, it is 503-505-6964. I have hidden your keys. I have not hidden your keys, but I am actually going to activate the phone right now. I turned it off because right as we began the show, little by little, I'm finding these sound effects that need to be turned off, and I'm getting them silenced. There was the sound effects, like every time we were on the phone with somebody, and like some other guy would call in, and there was that jazz where it would go like in the background, it would let me know that there was an incoming call. And so I managed to get that one turned off. I am actually turning off the sound that indicates an incoming call, because it actually puts a huge thing on the screen that says, call! So now I know that. All right, there you go. The phone is now activated. It is 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be a part of the show, 503-505-6964. I realize when I say if you'd like to be part of the show, you're saying, about what? You haven't done anything. I don't know either. It's a thing people seem to like, and so I'm giving the option to do it. That is what Dale Carnegie would do, my friends. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. At some point, there will be a dawn at rickemerson.com. That day is not today, because I forgot to put it in my day planner. If it's not in the day planner, it doesn't happen. You can chat if you like. You go to Rick Emerson. It's like 1,000 ways for people to talk to us. It's hard. Life is hard. All this science is taxing. If you'd like to chat with us, you can do it. It's rickemerson.com. You go there. And we are on the Meebo chat server. M-E-E-B, as in baklava. Oh, Meebo.com, and that sort of integrates and unifies all the different extant chat programs in there, where Rick Emerson Show is what we're on there. And we're not Rick Emerson there. We're Rick Emerson Show. It's all very complicated. Anyway, that is how you can do it. You email, you chat, you call, or you just listen and grow smarter and funnier by the moment. Coming up later on today, David Walker will be with us. David Walker, who is a Portland author, now a film critic for amusement purposes only, for his own enjoyment. He was a professional film critic, but now he's been writing a masterwork of some kind. We're going to find out more about that. So David Walker will be here in the studio joining us later on. He'll be our first in-studio guest that's not Greg Nibbler, won't he?
He will indeed.
Because Greg came in the other day when I embarrassingly asked him to get me a soda. About which I felt really bad later, by the way. I went home that night. It was, I guess, after Monday's show, because Greg had been here, because, you know, on the off chance, I mean, really, just the unbelievable, like, million to one chance that something was going to go wrong technically, that there was going to be some sort of a broadcasting glitch, which we know didn't happen. But Greg was here anyway, I was going to say out of habit, I started ordering Greg around, but I didn't order him around
in my
own defense. Thank you for saying that, because somebody else who might or might not be married to me had a different view of it.
You requested that he assist you.
That he get me a beverage. And and the only reason for that, by the way, is because what I didn't really anticipate is, and I know that everybody else knows this, because, you know, like Court and Bobby and Sarah and Greg and, you know, Mike and Carol and Ted and Alice, everybody, they've all been doing online shows like forever, since the day they got fired, basically. And I haven't. And so they're all used to the fact that there are no commercial breaks. And that was a thing that caught me off guard. I'm like, what do you mean? I can't whiz? What do you mean? I have to whiz here? And then it was like, no beverage? Greg Nibbler, get me a... And I just really asked him to do it because I was parched. And I didn't want my dulcet tones to be sullied by dehydration. And so I asked him rather politely, I thought, to get me a Viso. Which I thought I was very courteous about it. And so I go home and... Wife's like, yeah, it was great for a show, except for that dick move where you ordered Greg to get you a Viso. What's wrong with you? You're an a-hole. And so for the rest of the day, and I was walking, and I was doing that thing, which some of you who have spouses may know, where, you try to pretend like it. Well, you know, I don't feel like it. Like I ordered him around, honey. I feel like I was thirsty, and he didn't take it wrong. But then for the rest of the night. Like when your tongue is probing where a tooth used to be, I just kept going back to it. Like, but he really, baby, he didn't mind. It's Greg loves to get me sodas and give me foot rubs. And I was just trying to, like, over and over. And then I worked myself up into such a frenzy of Catholic guilt that I actually emailed Greg.
Dear Greg, I am sorry that I made you get me a soda. I know that you are I'm not your boss right now. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Send.
And so then I send Greg this, like, long, neurotic email apologizing for asking him to get me a soda. Boy, this makes me sound crazy. And then it's that thing where he got the email. Like, the email arrived in his inbox, but then he just didn't notice it somehow. So he didn't respond. Mm. And so then, like, hours go by, and I'm looking at my inbox.
He's not speaking to me.
Oh, God, he's decided to shun me. I'm no longer part of the Greg Nibbler's circle of acquaintances. And then he didn't text. He didn't call. He didn't send flowers. And finally, yesterday at 4:30 in the afternoon, we're up on the rooftop patio, and I'm not making that up, by the way. We're up on our plush rooftop digs overlooking the city, and he says, "Oh, hey, I just got that email. It was in my junk mail for some reason. Yeah, it's not a big deal." And he walked off, and I was like, "Damn!" And then I wondered if I should have even bothered to send it in the first place. Now I don't know. See, now I feel like I've used up my apology too. Like I can't. Now I can't really order him around, because then if I do it twice, then it's a pattern of me being a dick.
Well, I did that with you recently. There was the thing where you had done something generous, and I made some kind of a crack, as
I know
I'm
exactly
wont to do.
What you're talking about.
And then you emailed and you're FYI, I would have talked to you about this before the thing. And so then I sent you back this very carefully thing, like, I apologize for offending you. My comments were stupid and thoughtless. And then when I saw you later, you're like, no, I just wanted to know. I was like,
you don't think we're being deliberately vague, because I don't want it to be like a Page Six column where, like, a celebrity you would all know was seen shooting up heroin. We won't tell you who it is. It was, we have a new studio here. Dawn and I are sharing a studio with Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon, which makes me feel sort of proud and old all at once. It's like, you know, I don't mean this to sound insulting. I know this sounds like a condescending thing to say. But, you know, it's like when your child walks on its own. You're like, look at that. I taught it to walk. Not that they needed my help. But they're doing their own thing, which is cool. And so we share a studio with them. So we see them every day. And they're going to be on the show Friday, actually. Greg and Sarah will be in the studio here with us on Friday to talk about their listener party and whatnot. But as we're setting up the studio,
You know, there's mics and a dry erase board and a mixing board and computers and cables and whatever. And there was something that we were missing for the studio. I won't go into all the details. It's not important. But there was something we were missing for the studio. And so I obtained said item and brought it in. And I said, hey, I noticed we didn't have a bifurcator. So I picked one up at the store. There you go. There's your bifurcator. And Sarah and Greg said, oh, that's great. Thanks. We needed a bifurcator. That's a really nice one, too. And Don said, oh, that's great. That's more. That's fantastic. That's more money that we have to make before this. Before we even out of the. Before we all quit owing you money for things you've spent on this.
Well, because also it wasn't just that you gave us this thing, but I was like, oh, and Sarah Grant, oh, that's a really nice bifurcator. Those are incredibly expensive bifurcators.
And
so I'm like, oh, man, I'm never going to get a payout on this thing. You keep buying stuff.
As opposed to a response like, thank you, Rick Emerson, or. What a great bifurcator that is that we're going to be doing this show using. Don was like, that's great. Now I'm sure we're going to be owing you money forever on this. When will I see a profit? And so I just said, well, I have to leave now then. And I just went to my car and sulked.
I'm such a dick.
Yes, it's true, but you apologize later.
I did apologize.
And see, no, more importantly, there's a thing that I can now hold over your head. So, you know, it's like if we have a fight and go like, look, you know, I know you're still in debt from the bifurcator that I bought for everybody to use.
Okay. All right.
It is. Jesus, it's 1:20 already. That thing is happening all over again. Wait, I have to turn the phone back on. I'm sorry. The phone was actually turned off this whole time. I claimed it was turned back on. Not so much. Turned off. All right. The phone is now. This is the time of the great on turning. All right. And our phone lines are open. Okay. There you go. Usually when people say that, you know, they don't. It's like it's a cliche or whatever. But anyway. What am I saying? Our phone lines are open. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-5964. That is how you can reach us right here, ladies and gentle folk. All right. Coming up today, Don Taylor will have more news and various happenings for you. We'll talk to Mr. David Walker. He's going to be in the studio with us, and later on we'll be doing a Mystery Top 5 as well. Also, another installment of Pop Culture Authority, which is going to tackle the pressing question, was the father in Finding Nemo a transsexual? And we'll find out all about that. It is 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And now, without further ado... I'm sorry. I'll hit the wrong button. Now, without further ado... No, that's the wrong button as well. Let's stop.
That's a lot of ado.
Look, why don't you just shut up over there? You know, I bought a bifurcator for the studio, you damn woman. I'm sorry. Was that out loud? Ladies and gentlemen.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Here's Don Taylor at the Rick Emerson Show news desk.
The U.S. Secret Service was investigating $50 bills that were possibly counterfeit and... Counterfeit? That's not a word.
No, counterfeit, and I was trying to make a gefilte fish joke there, and it doesn't work.
U.S. Secret Service was investigating $50 bills that were possibly counterfeit that had been passed at a Little League concession stand at David Douglas Park in Vancouver, Washington last
month. What do you mean they've been passed? Well, not by Little Leaguers themselves.
No, a woman used them, actually.
All right.
The Vancouver Columbian reported that some of the bills even passed by Fraud Detection Inc. Cascade Little League officials said two women tried to pass what concession stand employees called a strange-looking $50 bill at Harmony Sports Complex on May 20th. Womple said some bills were passed at a mall in Portland, but they did not know if the cases were related. He said, we think they were bleached fives made into 50s.
Here's the thing about counterfeiting that I could talk all day about counterfeiting. Not that I do it or advocate or endorse it or promote it in any way, you understand. But what I don't understand is if you're going to go to the, like if you just got like regular, as I think a local DJ recently learned. First of all, you shouldn't go to the trouble of bleaching money. If you go to the, look, even if you are a kooky morning guy, bleaching money will, that'll get the man at your door. And how do I say this? I don't want it to be like I'm just piling on or like I'm speaking from some place of irritation and annoyance with whatever. I'm really not. I'm just saying, even if you are a morning DJ, I don't understand exactly how it is that you don't know that the Secret Service, like counterfeiting, is their bailiwick. That's what they do. Everybody knows that. Anyway, but if you have the wherewithal to bleach money, because that's not just like with regular Clorox, is it? We're not going to try
how
it.
How would I know?
I don't know. But
it might be. It's cotton fibers are used to make money.
Let me actually go to the other side of the equation. And let's not even talk about the bleaching part of it. Let's say you've got a blank piece of paper that feels like money. It's got the linen feel to it, you know, mm-hmm. but it's just off-white. But there's no coloring on it whatsoever. If I gave that to you and said, look, I want you to take this home and print onto it a reasonable facsimile of a $5 bill, would you know how to do that?
No.
No. And so I don't get these guys who counterfeit who are...
Not very good at it?
No, but the thing is, they're good enough to try it, but they're not good enough to be successful at it, which I guess maybe is nature's way of distributing favors, because you have a criminal mind and you kind of know how to do it, but you only got like 70% of the knowledge. And then it's like the guy who gets the anarchist cookbook off the internet and then, bam, one sleeve too many. That's what it is with this guy, too. Final thought about counterfeiting, which is sort of fascinating to me. I mean, I'm not a counterfeiter, you understand, in any way, because that would be wrong and illegal and I don't do it. But the thing about counterfeiting is that they have taken such measures against that. And this is not a conspiracy theory. I saw this happen with my own eyes. I have an artist friend of mine who was doing some work for me for a separate project. And he at one point had to scan, and then we were using some of the work parts from like a dollar bill or something. But he scanned a dollar bill into his computer using Adobe Photoshop. And I have a screen capture of this. I swear to Christ, a huge warning window came up on the screen that says, "It appears you are scanning in United States currency. Just be aware." I swear to God, it is not like a thing you heard or Snopes or like a friend. I saw it.
Wow.
Because I said, really? And he goes, I'll show it to you. And he took out his laptop and he did it. He scans in a dollar bill. Adobe Photoshop says, "It appears you are scanning in U.S. currency. Please be aware that while you can modify this image, you will not be able to save it or print it in any way." And so that's kind of creepy because the
That's to cover Adobe's.
But here's my question. I understand that it's to cover somebody's ass, but my question is, did Adobe do that of their own volition, or did someone order them to do it, or did someone actually say, you know what, it'd be a good idea if you put this warning into your software, just FYI? Or is it in fact not Adobe? Is it Apple, or is it Microsoft, or is it whatever? It's a weird, and how does it know that you're scanning in currency? It's just weird. The whole thing freaked me out a little bit. Because I am not a conspiracy theorist. You know why? There's no need for conspiracies. It's all true. All of it. The government is corrupt. People are evil. JFK was probably killed by gypsies. I mean, it's just, all of those things are true. There's no sense in even wondering if there's a conspiracy. The game is in fact rigged and you will lose. That is an open fact. All right. Well, in any event. David Walker is going to join us later, by the way. Here's Don Taylor at the... Are you ready? This is a big ramp-up news desk.
Parents expressed anger after students were shown sex acts simulated on stuffed animals during a sex education class at a high school in Shenandoah, Iowa.
Wait, hold on. Hold that call. Hold that for just one second. I have to answer this. Hello? We'll get back to that in a second. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Who might this be?
This is Greg.
Hello. I'm sorry, I got to adjust my microphone. Hello, Greg. How are you today?
Radio, and to be glad to announce that my "I Survived the Unpleasantness" T-shirt goes back into the closet, and be glad to know that we are beyond the reach of any jackass who thinks CCR needs to be played instead of your show.
Thank you. And by the way, that was me that just unplugged the phone there. That was not your computer. If you're listening at home, that was actually me. I bumped the laptop, and part of your call got cut. But you said your "I Survived the Unpleasantness" shirt, once again is accurate, and you will not need it in the future.
That's right. It's going back into the closet for now, and hopefully never to have to be worn obvious reasons.
You know
thanks, Rick.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. There you go. There's that guy. Yeah. You know what's great is that I'm going to keep the sound effect when I answer and hang up, though, because I think it's boss. Monday night, you know, we did the first show. We did Legion News, and then we did this very fine radio program, and then we went home. And I walked into the kitchen, and Lara's there making dinner, as is her place, wearing, I didn't even know she owned this. I don't even know where she got it, frankly. I mean, presumably from me, but I don't remember selling it to her. Not that I would sell my own wife. You know what I mean. But my wife is wearing an "I Survived the Unpleasantness" shirt. Because really, let's be honest, it's as irritating as I can be on the air, it's no picnic having me around like all the time, like living with you. That's There's nowhere to go. You have to leave the house to get away from me. You guys can just turn off the radio, or you know, just decide I'm gonna listen to Yanni records. You live with me, you pretty much got to move out to get away. So now I'm gone for vast sections of the day, and she's much happier.
I'll bet your dogs are sad though that you're not around as much.
I have the cutest picture of my dog. Oh my god! Hello. I'm a woman. I don't even know if this is a thing. This is probably sickening people. I gotta tell you, I didn't take it, Lardy, but I have the. She sent me the cutest picture of my dog Philo. I gotta show it to you later.
Okay,
I'll show it to you on the air. Does Walker have dogs?
We can.
David Walker.
I don't think so.
He doesn't have non-human living things
would,
in his apartment.
Would you like me to go get David Walker?
No, I told him that. I told him to aim to be here around 1:30. We'd have him on around 1:45.
Well, he is actually here.
I know.
Okay. All right.
Is he going?
We don't have a Greg Nibbler to say, please usher our guest into the studio.
I believe Cheryl is here.
All right.
Cheryl Kenneco, our chief of staff, I think is here to make that happen.
All right.
She's not going to get me a soda, though. I've tried that.
No.
He's not milk. It's not going to expire. He's just a...
Yes, he'll go bad if we don't use him quickly enough.
You've diverted me from telling stories about my dog photo, so...
So are you going to... explain why the dog photo was so cute, or just let everyone guess?
See, now the thing is, see, by dint of this, now I am obliged to put it up on the Intertron.
Yeah.
Because even though that will annoy people, because to do otherwise is then to describe this visual, to do what we always do, which is to describe something visual and then to not actually show it to
people. If you put it on Facebook right now, we could all look at it.
All right. I'm going to...
Because that makes good radio, putting... us sitting here talking about you putting up a cute dog picture on your Facebook.
See, and you say that like it's not true, but you know what? I think I would say that the evidence, the anecdotal evidence would indicate that, in fact, that is good radio and that it, a substantial number of Portlanders would agree with you. Hold on a second.
And it shows how modern and up to the minute we are that we are using social networking as part of our intranet entertainment.
Yes, we've made it to 2002. All right, I'm going to save. All right, while we're talking here, Don Taylor,
yes.
I'm going to be, let's do, and we will bring David. I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm not saying like he can't come in or he has to wait outside or something.
I'm still figuring out the dynamic of who does what and how it gets done. And, I'm just grateful that you didn't ask me to go get you a soda. You know, I keep waiting for that to happen. Don, go fetch me something.
Well,
I'm surprised it doesn't happen.
Damn it all to hell.
And I don't know what my response should be if you do.
I think you know the answer.
Go to hell, Rick Everson.
No.
I don't know. No, that should be it?
Try again.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
How quickly would you like it, sir?
All right. I'm going to, while you're doing the story, I'm going to get this photo of my dog ready to post. If you're really good, I'll actually get one of his chew toys in the background as well.
Dave in the chat box says, I can find this. The sad thing is, I couldn't care less about the dog picture, and yet I am compelled to log into Facebook to see it.
In your face, Dave. Suck that, huh? All right. Hold on a second. I'm posting it. You can read another story while I'm posting.
I'll go back to the stuffed animal story.
Right.
Parents expressed anger after students were shown sex acts simulated on stuffed animals during a sex education class at a high school in Shenandoah, Iowa. It was horribly inappropriate, one furious mom, Colleen Dostal, told Fox News Radio. To do that in a mixed gender classroom, I truly believe it was inappropriate. Mrs. Dostal's 14-year-old son was one of a handful of 8th graders in the Planned Parenthood class. The students, she said, were given instruction on how to perform female exams, and the instructor used a 3D...
Wait, whoa, no, let's back up for a second. I know that half of me is putting up a picture of my dog on Facebook. So this busybody mom, her complaint is it was not that the kids were shown humping on dolls. That came out wrong. But they were shown sex acts via the demonstration of dolls. But it's that it was A, mixed gender... But the dolls were being used to demonstrate how to give a female exam. Don't they have doctors who do that now? Students shouldn't. They're doing that on themselves, are they?
Well, they were given instruction on how to perform female exams. The instructor used a 3D anatomically correct male sex organ to explain how to use a condom. But Mrs. Dostal said she was most upset over the instructor using stuffed animals to illustrate various sexual acts.
What kind of stuffed animals? I mean, were they in fact stuffed animals? Or were they stuffed, were they dolls, or...
They keep saying stuffed animals.
Were they anthropomorphized animals? In other words, was it like a Bugs Bunny that walks upright, or was it like a stuffed animal that at least has some relation to what a normal animal looks like? These are all things that I want to know. This story is lacking so much detail.
Anyway, she said that, I do not understand why any adult with a classroom full of children would show them sexual positions. It was a sex ed class. She thought it was inappropriate. She said she also believes some photographs used during the class were pornographic.
All right, hold on.
Ms. Horner, the teacher.
Ms. Horner?
The teacher of the class.
Horner?
Ms. Horner.
I got to get the Barely Knew Her sound. This is
Planned Parenthood's Jennifer Horner said, "We're not trying to keep any of this a secret. All information we use is medically accurate and science-based."
Okay. Let's see. Upload a photograph. All right, I am uploading a... This is in real time. You are hearing this as it happens. I am uploading a photograph of my dog. That is happening to the information superhighway right now. A photograph of my dog being uploaded to the internet. Are we ready, Dawn?
I am so
All right,
ready.
Hold on a second. I'm uploading a photo of my dog to the Intertron now. All right. Wait, no, I'm sorry. Now.
I think we need Facebook upload music.
All right. And this is all true. I've suddenly turned into James Lipton. And please now tell me about your dog. This is a photograph which is uploading now. I think I've chosen an inappropriately large photograph. It's like 900 megs or something. Well, that'll be up. Here's my thing about the sex ed with the dolls, though. So she's fine with the kids, with dolls being used to show the kids, like, and this is reverse cowgirl. But she just doesn't want, like... Is her fear that it's like the two inert elements, like you have the nitro and you have the glycerin, put them together, bam. If it's like the boys and the girls, if they suddenly are aware of the sex act like at the same time, then that's where the issue is gonna come. Is that the deal here?
I don't know. I think that this woman just probably thinks that it's okay to talk about sex in some sort of vague clinical sense, but then once you actually start illustrating, you know, how it's done,
so it's
inappropriate.
Sex in a sort of theoretical way,
yeah,
is kind of okay. All right, let me refresh my Facebook page now and see if it's no. And it
I'm not seeing any. Well,
just get off my back. I'm doing the best I can here. All right, now I have to type it in again.
I'm eager for the cuteness.
As promised, for the love of God, a photograph of my dog. God, I sound like a retard. You know what I sound like? I just realized it. I sound like everyone on Facebook. Here's a photo of my dog. A photo of my dog. Hold on. Where is this? Donna. Asian. Is. All right. And. Okay. Yes? Can I help you with something?
No, just people on the text box. Still no picture. Where's the dog picture?
You know, maybe there could be a picture of people giving me a goddamn moment to get it loaded. Probably not, though. All right. And wait. And share. All right. Now I'm pressing the share button. Oh, there we go. All right. It's a photograph of my incredibly weird-looking and, I suspect, autistic dog, Philo. There you go. Because all he does is just sit and stare blankly at walls or things that aren't there.
Oh, God.
What?
It's hilarious. You're right.
What kind of a reaction is that to a picture of a man's dog?
It's...
You don't do that to a picture of a guy's dog. Say, oh, my God.
I was expecting cute, and it's like a mugshot, and he looks perplexed.
No, that's the thing. He's confused all the time. That's the thing about... You've seen the other dog.
He looks
though.
Like he's thinking, oh, well, yep.
Have you seen my other dog?
Yes.
Because the other dog is... Okay, and I swear to God, we'll stop the dog talk in a second. But as Laura will tell you, when we got this dog, she confessed this at one point, that she was secret... We got him when he was a puppy. He was only like a few weeks old. She confessed that she thought he would grow up to be, quote... This is what she called him. She said she thought he would grow up to be a calendar dog. You know, like the kind that's adorable, that's on like a guidance school counselor posters. Because our dog Max is like a little... He's, you know, male, but he's like a little beauty queen. I mean, he's like a little puffball. He looks like he ought to be, you know, like on a Hallmark card. I mean, I'm not bragging. It's just, he's very girly looking. He's very, very cute. Philo is perpetually confused, frightened. This is the dog who...
He has a lazy eye.
This is the dog who, when I was taking him for a walk, and this happens all the time, he was terrified by the sound of a dried leaf blowing by on the sidewalk. And he actually leapt like 5 feet to the right. He leapt 5 feet there because the sound of a leaf blowing by, like a... And the sound of his own tail hitting it like a cupboard when he wags it will, in fact, terrify him so much he runs into the basement. So he's not very bright is the thing. He's just... And I'm not going to have any false whatever about that. He's just... I think he's retarded. So there you go. There's a photograph of my dog, Philo. I can't be mean to him. He's just dumb.
He's adorable. He really is. For some reason, you said cute dog photo, and that's not what I was expecting.
It's not. Here's the thing. It's not Robert Redford cute. It's Mr. Potato Head cute. and the thing is that I can't be. You know, he's a year and a half, almost two. He's not going to get any smarter.
Yeah.
He's maxed out. Look. Can I just be honest? He's like most of the kids out there. He's at wherever he's gonna get to. I'll tell you what, if your kid is 13 and is eating pieces of paint off the side of the house, not going to get any better. If I were you, I'd leave that kid at a rest stop because you can see the future of right there, stretching out before you like an endless bleak highway of late night calls to bail him out of the pokey. Let's do one more, then okay. We'll do today's installment of Pop Culture Authority, after which we'll welcome Mr. David Walker to the program. This is Don Taylor at the news desk. Oh, my God. Look at that dog. Thanks.
Anthrax has killed at least 30 hippopotamuses in a popular Ugandan game park that saw a similar outbreak 6 years ago. Tom Akello, conservation area manager at Queen Elizabeth National Park, a much-visited safari destination, said 10 of the hulking semi-aquatic animals were found dead over one half-day period alone. This was something that we had seen before, so I knew immediately that we had to get the blood samples tested, he said, recalling a 2004 outbreak that claimed around 300 hippos around a small lake in the park. When anthrax is involved, the blood doesn't clot. That's the reason we have to act very fast. Anthrax emanates from spore-forming bacteria in soil along lake shores. It can be contracted by wildlife through open wounds. Flesh-eating vultures and big cats in the park can also spread the illness.
Flesh-eating vultures.
Flesh-eating vultures.
As opposed to herbivore vultures. The thing about, aren't all vultures flesh-eating? Isn't that the deal? Don't they, they're carrion birds or whatever? I don't know. I don't really care.
I have no idea.
I'm asking, but don't even.
I'll
not
say
even worth
yes,
calling.
And then someone will pop up and say, "Well, actually, there's a species of vultures that only eats."
Yeah, please don't call.
I don't know.
The thing about anthrax is that, we went from not knowing about it to like really being worried about it, and then like not really thinking about it again. The problem is, it's like all of these things where the problem goes away, but then the cure, which is always worse than the problem itself, persists. So like now, every jackass office building in the world. He's got to have a whole thing in the mailroom about, like, if you receive a package that seems to have a strange return address or contains anything powdery at all, please obey the following 17. And then you got to go to goddamn the intercom was like this. You would just have to go sit in the conference room while some dick would just drone on at the front about, and so what, anybody, what happens if you get a package in the mail and it seems to contain a spore-like substance? Anyone? Does anyone know that you, in the front row? Gloves, exactly. You want to put on gloves, and you don't have to leave the area. No, you don't have to leave the office, but you should set it aside, maybe in another room. Do you have a closet somewhere? And in the back, you're just going, kill me, kill me, kill me, kill me. Why am I here? All right. You know, when I was at the final thought on this, you know, when I was at CBS, and I was I was a department head, which I think explains a lot about the eventual fate of all those radio stations. Rick Emerson, make him a manager. Ooh, he seemed to have gone bankrupt. But that'll work out much differently here, of course. The thing it's that they would do at CBS, I swear to God, this sounds like it's an office sketch. And I know probably everybody says that now. This sounds like something for the office, but I swear to you what happened. They would do this thing at CBS once a year. They would get all the department heads into a conference room. And this guy who is the head engineer, not from Portland, but from like CBS, like the West Coast office or whatever. And all I know is he had like corkscrew-looking hair. He kind of looked like Eugene Levy, sort of. Yeah, like the big sort of the white man's fro. And he would come and he would sit down, and he had a big red envelope. And he would take the red envelope, and it was sort of like Price Waterhouse style, and he would tear open the envelope, and all the department head people had to be there. It's like all the program directors and promotions directors and whatever. He would open the envelope, and I swear to God, inside the envelope was some sort of like catastrophe or biohazard or natural disaster of some kind. And then you had to like – he'd go around the room and interrogate you about what you would do. And one of them was – 5 million gallons of liquid ammonia have spilled just outside the door of your studio. What do you do? Rick Emerson. And he goes right to me. And I just said, I think I said like...
Scream and run.
I didn't say that. I did say something like, Christ, I don't know. And I just looked at him blank. I looked at him like Philo, like my dog. Just, what? And he just shook his head. And he just went. And it was like I was on the McLaughlin group or something. He was like, he was just going around going, wrong, the answer is 12. Back after this. Well, in any event. Yes, you look like you were about to say something.
Me? Nah. Yeah.
All right. You had something faced there. All right.
I got nothing.
All right. Straight ahead, we will have Mr. David Walker, who will be joining us here in the studio. Coming up later on, we have Corpse Watch on the way. Corpse Watch, also a Cannibal Watch, and quite possibly a Jackson Watch, if we have time. If for all that. Plus, I have all these questions about assisted suicide. I mean, just, you know, theoretical questions. There's no personal relevance there. So that's all in the way. You stay there. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program live on the Emerson News. Wait for it. No, I don't know where the thing went. I went to press the thing, and then now it's gone. And wait, hold on a second. Let me just live on the Emerson News.
You're all fired.
No, that went wrong as well. You know, I had the pop culture update all like loaded and ready to play, and then it was going to be a beautiful segue that went flawlessly. It didn't. It was less that way now than it should have been. And wait. And there we go. All right. Fantastic. Fix it all in post. And the thing is, when I say that now, it's not a joke. I could really fix that if I wanted to.
You could.
I won't, though. It's my warts that make me interesting. People shouldn't say that out loud, including me. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Stay right there. Don't go anywhere. We return in moments. This is the Emerson News Network. Oh, for the love of sweet Christ almighty. It's right there. It should be playing. I have no idea. All right, we're going to do this one more time, and then I'm going to give up, and I'm going to drink a bottle of whatever's under the sink until I'm dead. All right, and who's ready to try that one more time?
Anyone? I am.
Dawn Taylor in the back. Excellent. Fantastic. All right. This is the Emerson News Network.
Is the fishy father in Finding Nemo a transsexual?
From the Emerson News Network. This is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. Marlin, the requisite Disney widowed parent voiced by Albert Brooks in Finding Nemo, is a fish of the genus Amphiprion, better known as a clownfish. In the non-cartoon world, clownfish live in small groups inhabiting a single anemone. All but one of the group are male. A single dominant female rules over the group with her male breeding partner by her side. The rest of the group is a harem of smaller, non-breeding males. If and when the female dies, the dominant male changes sex and becomes the dominant female, and the largest male from the harem steps up as his, well, her, new breeding partner. Because clownfish are all born as males, they are what's called protandrous hermaphrodites. So it stands to reason that when Marlin's wife and all of his other children besides Nemo were killed by that nasty shark at the beginning of the movie, Marlin's genetic imperative would have kicked in and turned him female. Perhaps the fact he didn't have a harem around from which to choose a new boyfriend kept him in a perpetual state of limbo. But sooner or later, he was going to shift from daddy fish to mama fish. As evolutionary biologist Joan Roughgarden wrote, in biology, nature abhors a category. Or to quote the great philosopher RuPaul, we're all born naked. Everything else is drag.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
The pesos. Yeah, and that seems fair. And that seems fair. And that seems fair. And that seems fair. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Let's go.
Hello to you. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. That was the mellifluous sound of Roger Klein. Roger Klein and the Peacemakers, formerly Roger Klein and the Refreshments, effectively the same band. Banditos, live on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. The greatest use of sound in the history of all recorded mankind. It is 1:51. It's Wednesday?
It is indeed.
Excellent. If I can get the day of the week right, then I'll tell you what, we're like 98% toward the cerebral capacity required to create this work of genius. It is 503-505-6964. You want to be part of the program. And why wouldn't you, my chums, my amigos, my compatriots, my fellow travelers on the road of amusement? 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Perhaps send me photos of your dog. Please don't. You can also chat if you like. Here's the thing, though. If you're chatting, when you go to chat, I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm just saying it's a distinction I should draw. It's not really me you're talking to. It's Dawn.
And don't be offended if I don't respond to you, because I'm...
She loathes all of you.
I'm doing stuff here.
Views you as a pack of sycophants and parasites.
I'm just basically peeking over occasionally, looking for the clever.
Hates you. Hates you with every ounce of hate that her cells can muster.
I'm scribbling little notes and whispering under my breath about how much I loathe all of you.
That's what I'm saying. It is the Rick Emerson program. Let's hold on. Let's see if I can figure out where the hell mic number three is, shall we? Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend, Mr. David Walker. Can I get you to bring that microphone a little bit closer to you?
I was going to say, do I need to?
There you go.
I need
just
to lean into it.
Drop the level there, and yeah, just if you want to, just turn the little.
I'll just hold it like that.
Just hold
Can
it like
you hear me?
Hold it Sinatra style. There you go. Fantastic. I realized I should have had some sort of an introduction for you, with some sort of a theme music.
I have to say though that I feel right now. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
because I can't hear myself.
Do not have headphones? Are they not? You know, there's a volume knob for them.
Yeah, I could hear everything before. That's okay. I don't want to...
Don't be that guy. Don't worry about me.
No, seriously, don't worry about me.
No, because then you're my mom, all right? And that's just weird. Let's try... say something.
Okay. Oh, yeah, now I can hear
there
myself.
See, there's a volume knob.
I hate the sound of my own voice, though.
Here's the thing. When the volume knob is lower, you're going to get less sound.
Okay.
Contrarily, up, you'll be able to hear yourself. Okay. And then we'll be all good, so...
I was going to... You know, I feel like right now... I feel like it's a cross between a job interview and I've been called into the principal's office, which is not the feeling I was expecting, because as I was walking up here, I got to be honest, Rick, I felt like, you know that ex-girlfriend that you're still on okay terms with, maybe you haven't seen her in 10 or 15 years? That's what I was feeling like walking up here, this giddy feeling of like this reunion. I haven't seen you in forever.
And the principal's office thing is undoubtedly because we haven't gotten any decent lighting in here yet, so we're sitting under banks of fluorescence.
And I don't know anything about these.
We're getting our taxes done.
When you said the thing about the you know, the ex that you're still on good terms with, I don't know what that's like. You'll have to look.
Okay,
and I'm surprised you know what it's like.
I was imagining.
Yeah.
That was me
theoretically
imagining, yes.
Here's the thing about this office where we are now, and I'm trying to I'm adjusting the levels here because Dawn and I are on one type of microphone. You were on a different type of mic, so I'm just trying to balance these all out here. So I'm riding the levels, as they say. We are still in the process of moving in, as you might have noticed.
I can see that.
There's, you know, like when you go into Costco or whatever, there's unfinished ductwork everywhere.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The studio equivalent of unfinished ductwork is soundproofing that is either incomplete or not covered.
Yeah.
So there's soundproofing that's covered on this wall behind me. The door has some, but it's actually not covered. So you can just see the sort of banana fingery foam stuff sticking out. And then over here in the corner, which I've covered with a bit of black draping so as not to offend, is just a huge pile of just random, you know, soundproofing stuff. None of it matches. You know, it's all like, it's like some weird hodgepodge. But then it's all going to be covered with black because that then makes it look as though you are stylish and understated. So the walls are all going to be, next time you come in here, it's going to be like you're going to Trent Reznor's house, where it's just nothing but, you know, and then a candle burning in the
center.
Like you
said, it's covered up so as not to offend. Like, and I'm thinking, what, are you porn over there? Is that's
no?
That's what I think in my mind.
No, of course not.
Soundproofing equipment is going to offend me.
It's a bunch of random like comforters and things and pieces of foam, and it looks like some elementary school girls are like having a sleepover.
Well,
it's really what it looks like.
And I don't want to reveal the location because here's the thing. And you guys who are maybe have done your own show or maybe your own recording studio, or if you're in a band, guys in bands know this. You know, It is impossible to find, for anything less than an incredibly, if you can find them new sometimes, but they're expensive, is those egg crate mattress pads.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like I said, it's sort of a banana finger thing, but it looks like an egg crate, but it's foam. And they used to use them for people who were bedridden because it keeps your skin from getting pressure sores because it distributes your weight more evenly. But they make pretty decent soundproofing material, and they're fairly cheap. And so as a result, you can never find them because some dirtbag guy in some dirtbag band has been there 5 minutes before you and he bought every scrap of it that the woman had. So when you find a place that has cheap soundproofing material, you don't tell anybody about it.
You keep it secret, yeah.
So
yeah.
I found a place, though, that sells these remnants of mattress foam pad. Because the other alternative, which I used to do when I was in the a sort of terrible band when I was growing up, is you would just go to Goodwill or to the classifieds before there was Craigslist. You could find a couch and you just cut open the cushions and just take the foaming, the batting from the inside. Mm-hmm. And then, but then the thing is, then it just smells like a dead guy's ass, you know, wherever you are, like forever. So
we do have the big thing of egg crate foam on the door because the door was leaking, sound like crazy. Except when Rick first put that up. It was too big, and he didn't have a thing to cut it down. And then he went out to go get Viso, and he came back, and he forgot that he'd put a queen-size mattress pad on the back of the door, and he opened it up, and it flapped at him, and it scared him.
I was... and then I jumped after a dried leaf blew by me on the sidewalk. So the studio right now is decorated, if you want to call it that, with some egg crate foam on the back of the door, a Futurama sign, courtesy of Ms. Dawn Taylor, and speaking of dogs, a portrait of Greg Nibbler's dog, Butters, as painted by Sarah X. Dillon, who's created quite a bustling side business for herself, doing portraits of people's dogs. A man in this city, and that's like a golden ticket in Portland.
Yeah.
I mean, because
yeah.
You can just flag down like a random Subaru on the street, go, hey, miss, do you want a picture of your dog?
Yes.
You know, and then it's like you got $500 in your hand the next day. So
we have not just one dog hotel in this town. Isn't there like five?
Oh, yes.
There's. I mean, I don't know. I just. All this stuff is odd.
Are you a pet owner?
You don't have any pets.
Mr. Walker?
Okay, I'm going to explain to you my pet situation.
Okay.
Outside my living room, there's a cluster of trees, and there are squirrels that live in the trees. Those are my pets. I don't have any names for them, but I will often just sit and watch them, and I'm entertained by them.
This doesn't sound at all like a thing a serial killer would say.
No. But I made a discovery that I bet very few people know. I'm watching squirrel number one. I just call them squirrel one, squirrel two, and they do their thing. And one afternoon, I'm watching them, and one of them takes a piss right there on the limb of a tree, just pees, and just keeps moving like nothing happened, right? I've never seen a squirrel go to the bathroom before, but I thought about how many times I was walking by a tree and thought, is it raining? Is it?
And now you realize they were wetting all of humanity.
It's squirrels peeing on people.
Well, you know, but good for them in a way.
I mean, squirrels are bastards.
They'll
do it on purpose.
And they're smart. Like, if you could get away with that, if you could just whiz down, like, hey, how's it going? Yeah. I mean, I would. Now it sounds like I'm officially making it, like, trying to depict us as being in Trump Tower or whatever. But there is one of the nice things about the studio where we are is, what did Douglas Adams say? First, it is slightly cheaper. But also, there is, in fact, a really nice rooftop patio. And people think I'm being sort of wacky, you know, like when you call, when there's a place where your water heater is and you call, oh, it's a spare room, you know.
Yeah.
But it actually is. It's actually a really nice rooftop patio, and it overlooks the city, and it's sort of cool. But I was up there yesterday, and I was thinking, and it was after we'd had that story, the guy throwing the watermelon at the car, and I was thinking, you know, it is only because most of us have some weird internal regulator that people don't die constantly everywhere because the opportunities that life hands you are just limitless in that way.
And whenever you're on the roof of something, that's the first thing you think of.
It's
like,
about
what crap could I throw off of here?
And then I wonder if I jumped, what would happen, how long it would take me to hit the ground. The thing about squirrels, though, I was in Central Park one time. I think one of the first times I went to New York, and I'm a big fan of walking tours, but especially if it's like sort of if they're abnormal or unconventional walking tours. Like, there was one where it was like a union busting tour or something, but it was like where great labor management standoffs had happened in New York's history.
Okay.
It's sort of like their equivalent of like the Haymarket Riot or whatever. But at one point, one of these tours takes me through Central Park, and we see it was like they paid the squirrel to do it. Like a squirrel like running over and then like burying a nut in the ground. And then, like, pop, 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 like, patting the dirt back into the ground, and then sort of, like, looking around, and then kind of going, all right, then. And then running away. And I said, well, what's up with that? And the guy goes, oh, he's burying nuts for the winter. And I said, well, how? But he only buried one. Like, he's got to, like, he doesn't hibernate. He's got to need a lot of nuts for the winter. And he's like, oh, no, he'll bury, like, you know, 500 of those over the course of the summer. You know, he'll bury as many nuts as he possibly can, hundreds and hundreds. And I said, well, all together? And he said, no, each one in a separate hole. And I said, well, what? Then how does he know? And he must have heard this question a billion times. And he said they know exactly where every nut they have buried is, where it's located to like a millimeter. They just know it. Like in their head, they have just got this. They have got this minesweeper map of where every nut is, which is free. They got a brain the size of a pea.
Yeah, but really a whole lot of other things they need to know about.
They're not thinking about, hey, what's my status update on Facebook going to say today?
Yeah, they're not memorizing state capitals or anything.
Yeah. So.
Well, what does that say about me? I'm not doing any of those things either, except for the Facebook thing. Hold on. Let's see what people are saying about my dog. Speak among yourselves.
So that's squirrels. Those are my pets. My pet squirrels.
So you've just decided that's cheaper than getting and more low maintenance than getting an actual pet.
Exactly. And there's not the same attachment. So, like, if one of my squirrels runs out into the street and gets hit by a car, I'm not going to know because there's going to be another squirrel to replace it, and I don't have to worry about that. So it's like they're my squirrels, but then they're the world's squirrels. I'm sharing them with the world.
Well, and it's sort of, you know, it's like the chain of, you know, it's like a David Attenborough sort of, and the circle of life continues anew.
Exactly.
Do you have specific squirrels that you like better than the other squirrels? Like I don't like that brown one. He's a jerk, but the gray one's pretty nice.
I like them all with equal...
Like you all the same in different ways.
Yeah. I was trying to say, I like them with equal disdain. Maybe that's it. I mean, it's like, I like the squirrels better than I know my squirrels better than I know my neighbors. What does that say? So,
well, I mean, it means that you're not unlike Don and myself.
Yeah.
Probably. And that you're trying to avoid contact with other people. The thing about you, and I get so, George Carlin said this great thing about, as is always the case, he had this sort of final word on this. You know, he just said, when you buy a dog, you're buying a future tragedy, which is completely true. It's like you're buying this ticking time bomb of emotional breakdown because you just know. I mean, look, one doesn't even like to say these things aloud, but my dog Max is not a young dog anymore. And there will come a time when the Max, as they say at the veterinary office, goes off to the Rainbow Bridge, which I guess is like...
So he's playing with Prince in the Revolution, is that it?
I don't know. I just figured the Rainbow Bridge.
Oh, no, that's Graffiti Bridge, sorry.
I figured like Rainbow Bridge was the name of the company that came and emptied the dumpster out behind the veterinary, you know. Another bag of ashes, here you go.
I always hear that and I think that it's like Big Gay Al's Animal Sanctuary. It's a place where like, you know, dead gay people are like enjoying our dead animals.
I'd like
and they're
think
all
so.
They're all coexisting together on the Rainbow Bridge.
That is really where he would belong. He's far more, I'll put it this way, my dog is far more stylish than I am, and he doesn't wear pants of any kind. So, but you know, you think about, you know, like, well, you know, someday you've got to, whatever. And I get so, I had gone years and years and years and years. I hadn't had a pet of any kind, until a few years back when Lara finally was like, and finally, you know, and every guy knows what I'm talking about. Why did you agree to get a dog?
Oh, because your wife, your girlfriend, yeah, that's usually,
and because you wanted a dog because you didn't want kids.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. You know, I want something that screeches a lot and pees everywhere. Here you go. Here's a dog. Yeah. All right, and you're
and
good
it's going to continue doing that.
Yeah.
It's never going to learn how to drive and run to the store to pick up a pack of smokes like your kid would.
Exactly.
You know?
And you can leave it alone in the house when you go to work during the day, and it's not going to like drink bleach or stick its tongue in a light socket.
And here's the thing that I have learned is that, you know, because what's the problem with children other than like everything? The problem is that they leave. The problem with children is like the problem with the problem with Robert Downey Jr. in the movie Chaplin. The cute stage doesn't last nearly long enough. Goes from being way too young to crotchety and impregnating young girls. And, you know, you want him to be like the little tramp guy for most of the movie. And you didn't get that. With kids, it's like, hey, it's a yowling thing that poops everywhere. Hey, it's cute for like a minute and a half. Oh, God, it's in prison. But you know, you want it to be a toddler. Having a dog is like having a perma-toddler. Especially if you get like my dog Philo, who's just dense as a brick. So I mean, it's like having a 2-year-old like forever, and you can put it in another room and shut the door for hours if it bothers you.
Yes.
It's awesome. but I get so attached to animals. I had an ant farm at the last studio, I think, and I think I had to take it home because I think the janitors were freaked out by it. They were afraid they were going to knock it over and the ants were going to go everywhere. So I had an ant farm. And, you know, and the ants all eventually die, you know, because there's no queen, because I think that would get out of hand real quickly because there's only so much space. And the ants would die, and I was so depressed when the ants died.
Yeah, and it goes from very quickly from being an ant farm to just an ant graveyard, and then you just become obsessed with watching the ants bury their dead.
That's the thing.
And that's all they do for like weeks.
And it's like, and it's so weird. And it's like, and the other thing is, if you get new ants to put in the ant farm, they'll come in and they'll like create a burial ground, you know, because there's always one ant left who's like, well, I guess I'm the last ant standing.
Yeah, he's the I Am Legend ant.
And the other ants will come in like, look at this poor bastard. He was the last one. Well, back on the pile. And they'll, you know, but I actually gave it away. I actually took it to Goodwill. I cleaned it out and then I took it to Goodwill and I said, you know, needs ants but works and because it has a light, whatever. But I couldn't have it because it was freaking me out.
How does an ant farm not work? It's like two pieces of glass and some sand.
That's a fair point, I suppose. Maybe I oversold its attributes.
Well, no, I guess you... you know, if you were trying to move it on Craigslist, then it might be a problem. You'd need to let people know. Yes, it in fact
people
works.
Would be calling you on the phone going, does it come with the sand?
Yeah,
well, I only want to buy it if it comes with the sand.
It's a fully functional ant farm.
Do the ants seem happy? How do they get along in there?
I bought it from, you can get it at ThinkGeek, but I bought it at like Brookstone or one of those, you know, like I've got too much money places. One of those, I have a job.
So it was some kind
stores.
Of like upscale digital
It was an ant
farm
of the future, Don. Because buying anything...
You plug it into your iPhone.
Buying anything at that store is God's way of saying that, like, you know, you will be fired soon because you are not valuing your money. But it actually is, it's not filled with sand. It is filled with what they called, I swear to God, a space-age material. It's like a blue gel that is also a food source because they, like, infuse it with whatever the hell ants eat. Mm-hmm. But it also is sort of, it's like, what is that, opaque, where it's kind of transparent. And so as a result, there are lights, like footlights in the bottom. And the whole thing is illuminated so you can see. Now that I realize, now that I think about it, this is a stupid feature because you could see the tunnels they dig in a normal one by digging the tunnels. Really, the only thing I can see is solid gel, which by definition has nothing going. God, they horked me out of like $80.
So it was, and
you spent $80 on an ant farm.
All those sons of bitches.
I at some point stopped buying stuff like that. And I think part of it was simply by virtue of the fact that if I lose my job someday, I don't want reminders of the stupid ways I wasted my money.
Where it's like you're just sitting around going, oh, the things I'd do over again.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I didn't get an iPhone. That's why the cell phone I have is like 5 years old. And I'm like, see, this was a sound investment. It's still working. And I'm not regretting it and not thinking,
you know. You know what? Can I just tell you this? And I don't mean to be this guy. But let me just, I am going to be this guy for one moment. Let me say that when I was at CBS did this whole thing. And I should say, first and foremost, we'll talk more about this on Friday. Greg and Sarah are going to join us in the studio Friday. Greg Nibbler and Sarah Exton will be here, and as is our wont, we'll undoubtedly talk about the whole whatever that happened last year. But I don't bear any grudge about CBS as such. I mean, it was as Tom Likas says, it's their train set, and you know what? They can, you know, fire anybody they want, so whatever. They pay me for a while, and then they stopped, and that's just the way the world works. But one of the things they would do is they would buy you a BlackBerry and then the service for it. They would, like, get you the whole corporate account. And, you know, BlackBerry's a new BlackBerry. You know, the price is like $390 or whatever. And, you know, and that, you, if you get the service plan, it's still like $150 or something. And they're like, we'll buy you the BlackBerry. And I said, no, I'm going to buy it myself. And they're like, you're going to, you know, pay full price. You know, and I think I ended up buying like a refurbished one anyway. But the point is that, like, I bought it myself. And they said, well, why are you buying it? Why aren't you going to let CBS buy it? And I said, because the day that I get fired is not the day that I want to go spend $200 on a new phone.
Yeah.
I'd like to have some stuff that I've paid for and works. You know, it's the same reason I bought a cheap car and then I ate, you know, like oatmeal sandwiches for 6 months to get it paid off. You know why? Don't have to worry about car payments. Not that I have like any more money than any other radio guy. Okay. It's just that I didn't want to be paying on it. So I got this BlackBerry. It's my and I dropped it down some stairs and it shattered into a million pieces finally. And I went to the store and the Verizon guy said, well, I can sell you a new one. It's going to be $199. And I said, okay. I know. Like, what can you do that's cheaper? And he told me this thing. I don't know if everybody knows this. They will actually sell you a refurbished, reconditioned BlackBerry, $50. $50.
Okay.
And I mean, and so it's like, and so it is exactly the same. And you know what? And it freaking works. And it was $50. And it's just, and you know what? And if I break it, if I had to get another one, that still is only another
$50. $50, yeah.
And,
no, I didn't know that. That's pretty good.
I keep thinking about that, but I don't want to commit to the exorbitant amount of money it's going to cost me every month. Because the thing is, you know,
you're a phone breaker.
I'm like David Walker here. I have like a Virgin Wireless. Well, I don't know what kind of phone he has.
A Plaid Pantry telephone.
My phone. Well, I bought it at like Best Buy, but it's it's like 3 years old.
It's sleek though. It is, and it's nice.
It's like 3 years old, and all it really does is make phone calls and text. And
isn't that all you need to do?
And I throw $20 at it like every once in a while, and pay for my bill, and it cost me about $20 a month, except for that one time that apparently I ran out of money on my phone.
And I don't even remember that. I was just thinking how you're that woman from the Jitterbug ads in Parade magazine.
I am. I love those too. Those would be, because I am getting, again, we talked about this earlier, I'm to that point where I need bifocals, so it's like I'm gonna be like, buttons on my phone are too small. So
I'd like a phone with a dial tone.
I want a phone that just makes calls.
The best thing about the Jitterbug, the Jitterbug has a dial tone. That's like that's the single best thing about that phone. And first of all, it's huge. And it's got big buttons.
Yeah.
You know, for old people who are just sort of, I don't know, the fives in there somewhere. It has a dial tone. It doesn't have green and like send and end buttons. It just says like make call, hang up. And if like push comes to absolute shove, and Parade Magazine is the, I think, the only place that you can buy the phone other than like jitterbug.com, which I think by definition we know isn't going to be having a lot of brisk business, where if you still can't figure out the dialing and the pressing, there's just a big operator button that you press, and it connects to a spry young woman who will, in fact, just connect the call for you, like Lily Tomlin with a headset on. It's awesome.
Really? Wow. I did not know about that. I mean, my whole thing with cell phones is that I remember the way things used to be. I remember,
Just keep talking. Okay. I feel bad that you're having to hold the microphone.
I'm not worried about that. I remember the fact that my grandparents had the same phone on their kitchen wall from the time I arrived, and they'd had it for like 20 years. So it was like 40, 50 years that this phone was around. There's a principle involved, and that principle is that I don't think I should have to replace my phone every like year or two.
That is true. And see, it's interesting that you say that, because that is sort of a planned obsolescence that I guess I'd never really thought about until just this moment. I honestly had never considered that the phone is like the job. You used to get one when you were 18, yep, and it lasted you your whole life. Yeah. And now you get another one every 3 years, and then it stops working.
And not just phones. You know, the hard drive crashed into my computer like 2 weeks ago. I took it in. I had to, you know, have the guy try to retrieve everything off of it. And he goes, well, you know, the average life expectancy of a hard drive is 4 years. I was like, what? What, 4 years for, you know, everything's on here. But that's just it. I mean,
I had to go buy a new Wi-Fi router the other day. It'll last me about 18 months.
Yeah.
It just died. And I was like, what do you mean? It just broke?
It just stopped
working. It just wore out? How can it wear out? It's just sitting there.
That is interesting. I never really had thought about the actual disposability issue with so many devices and things now. I've seen that. All right, now I just feel like retrospectively taken advantage of by any number of companies.
Well, that's one of the issues with the iPhone. Apparently, if you want an older version of the iPhone, one of the early mm-hmm. iPhones, it's really hard to find one that isn't really, really scratched up and nasty, because they didn't bother to make them out of any kind of a hard plastic or to make the screen anything that had any durability, right, because they were built with the understanding, yeah, that you are going to be tossing these aside and upgrading them like every year and a half.
And let's just be honest. And as I say this, please now to understand, I am saying this as someone whose radio program is being encoded and sent to you by a Mac, whose show prep and sound is being played off a Mac, and you know, someone who owns, I probably own 9 books that are either about or feature prominently Steve Jobs. So clearly, like, the whole reality distortion field, I'm not immune to that. I mean, he warps my brain like everybody else's. But that's that whole thing where he just knows it doesn't, like, it only has to be kind of good enough. That's the, you know, as much as people tag Microsoft for that, you know, putting out endless versions until it finally works, I'm really not trying to start a whole flame war about this. I'm just saying, like, the iPad, you know, just like maybe just like one plug where I could stick something in. And I know that there's a way you can work around it to where like a plug for something else works. But just like it, I thought the thing with the USB port was that like it was universal. That's the U. So you can plug anything into it. So you get the iPad. That's great. I can't wait to put my photos into the. No,
it doesn't work.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess I'll just go home.
And yet, it was in the news this morning. They have now officially sold 3 million of them.
Well, of course.
And I do. I get very worked up. And again, part of it's the age. I'm a dinosaur. I'm a grumpy old bastard. And I remember, again, like I bought my first DVD player in like I'll say 1998. And I think so that was what, 12 years ago. And I think I'm on my fifth DVD player in 12 years. That just seems like ludicrous to me, because
because I remember my dad sitting down and like fixing our toaster, and now it's like you wouldn't even think about doing that, because a toaster costs you like $12,
yeah,
and you would just toss it in the trash and buy a new toaster.
And see, and the thing is, and I am such a cheapskate. I mean, you know, my love of technology notwithstanding, I am such a tightwad that I use things until they fall apart. I mean, if something is paid for, a car, a toaster, I use it until it. Our last toaster oven, and I had to break myself of another habit too. I don't know if you all do this, but I think I speak for probably for you, Don, and you, David, me, John, Big Tree. when I say that if you work in perhaps an unstable industry, maybe media or the entertainment industry, if you work in an industry where you are never, you know, you're either going to get paid nothing or you're going to get paid $1 billion a year. There's no middle ground. And also, you might get fired at any moment.
You just become an enormous, a tight-fisted holder onto of money. That was some interesting syntax there. But you know what I mean, right? I just hate to spend money. But the other thing I do is I buy the cheapest version of something possible, which always screws me. And
yeah,
I have to.
Yeah.
I bought this toaster oven, and Laura was like, you know, because I use my toaster oven all the time. She's like, well, buy the more expensive one. I'm like, oh, baby, that's $5 more. I'm going to get this one. And I mean, and it, like the second I had it, it started a fire. And I was like, I'm going to make some toast. You know, no, God! And I'm like running for the spray thing, the extinguisher. But man, I will use. I got a television, the big box cathode ray TV. Doesn't matter. I'm going to use HD, schmHD. I'm going to use that thing until I'm dead or until it just stops working. I'm never going to replace that. It's not going to happen.
I don't blame you.
Goddamn, we're old and grumpy.
I had to replace my microwave this year, but the one I'd had since 92.
Good for you.
And it just got to the point where
it was leaking too much radiation.
Yeah, it was. There was, you know, I was pulling stuff out, and it wasn't just steaming hot, it was glowing. And I thought, okay, wait a minute, this might not be any.
I was so pathetic that friends of ours actually bought us a microwave, Patrick and I, because they were tired of coming over to our house every weekend and having to deal with our microwave, which was the kind that you actually, you know, turned the dial and then it would finally go tick, 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 around, ding. And we go, yeah, you got to add 3 minutes to everything you cook, because it's not a very powerful microwave anymore. And then finally, they just came over one day with a giant box and said, we bought you a microwave.
It was like a combination microwave perfection game. Fantastic.
Yeah, I didn't realize how bad my microwave was until I got this new one. And, you know, I would heat up my tea for like 5 minutes. Okay. And so the first time I go to heat up the tea in the new one,
it's gone.
5 minutes. I go in and it's not in the cup anymore. It has exploded all over the place. Okay, so I cut down to 3, and I literally burned all the skin off my lip. It was bad. I guess the microwave I had kind of sucked, but it was.
Fantastic.
It seemed like it was working. You know, it's
all
the
relative.
Frog in the pot of water.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, that's my thing. It's like, you know, and fortunately, I mean, I will say this, that I'm very lucky. You know, my wife is not one of those. She's not a keeping up with the Joneses type, you know, to the degree that I think a lot of people, male and female, are. And she's not as seduced by objects that are shiny and bright as many people are. That being said, I think she's, in some ways, she and I are more vulnerable to it than the other people. You know, like I'm an early adopter of like tech gadgets and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I had the first MP3 player, the first one I think that I ever saw for sale from Creative, and it was like the size of a car. And it held, you know, 9 minutes of music or whatever. And it was just, and you couldn't unplug it, you know, and it was just huge. And the interface was crap and it was terrible. But her thing is, she's like, you know, she's like, it's a recession. We could probably get a flat screen TV off somebody, like really cheap. She keeps going back to the TV. And I keep saying, and she's like, because this TV looks bad. And I say, that's because you keep going over to somebody's house where they got one. If you're like me, you know what? Unless you were to bring a TV into the house and set it next to this one and put it on the same channel, I'm never going to notice the difference. If you put, you know, you don't know, as Elijah Muhammad said, one does not know a glass is dirty until one puts a clean glass next to it. I got a dirty glass at home. It's going to stay there until it breaks.
I was very impressed with myself when I got my TV, because it's like all of 27 inches, which was huge to me at the time I got it. And it's a sharp.
Yeah.
And it is. It's huge and it weighs a ton. And we moved it into the new apartment and it's great. And I don't watch that much TV on the TV anymore. I watch stuff on my computer.
Yeah.
So it's fine for what we do. And then my friend Eric D. Snyder, the film critic, said, after this movie we're seeing tonight, why don't you come over and watch Lost at my house? And I go to his house and he's got like the 52-inch flat screen TV and we're sitting there and it's HD. And it was like, I said, if I had this, I would never leave my house. So, I would never do anything except watch TV.
Now, here's the thing. There's
it's like it's too nice.
The Fred Meyer that I shop at, they, you know, the electronics is right across from groceries, and whatever TV they're selling there is terrible. And it's like a $2,000 TV. But every time I walk past it, they're showing some movie. And the other day it was Alice in Wonderland, the new Tim Burton movie. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, why does this look like a soap opera? Like, there's something about the image, the definition of the image is so high that it doesn't look like movies anymore. It looks like an old
It looks like
sitcom.
Real life.
Yeah, no, not even that. It looks like a...
Like videotape.
Yeah, videotape. Yeah. It looks like videotape. And I noticed this with like the three or four movies. And I was talking to somebody and they were like, oh, it's the interlace of the DPI, of the LCD, of the... I'm like, whatever it is, I'm not paying money for that. Because when I watch a movie, I don't want to, you know, like I could... There was one movie, and it wasn't a good movie, mind you, and I just happened to notice this at... Admire, but it was that Tooth Fairy movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, with The Rock.
With The Rock.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, the makeup lines on their face. And it's like, I'm paying $2,000 to see...
Something that looks worse.
Yeah, exactly. So, forget
Boy, don't,
about it, yeah.
Do yourself a favor. Don't ever look at Cameron Diaz on an HD television.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's like it burns. That's a burn that never comes off your retinas. It's like looking at a mud road. It's bad.
Well, the new movie coming out, Night and Day, it was really kind of odd because James Mangold directed it, and he does... a lot of these really intense close-ups. I mean, super, super close-up shots of both Cameron Diaz and Tom Cruise. Like, when he brings in for a one-shot, he comes in like their whole head is filling the screen. And I think it might be shot digitally. And I just kept looking at her skin. I was fascinated by her skin because I was trying to... Because in some scenes, it does look better than others, but you can see, like, you know, the sort of pockmarky sort of layer underneath the airbrushing that she's got. But it's like...
She's looking like Danny Trejo.
I will... I'll say this, actually. And then we should... and we'll go to the news desk here in just a moment. And then here's what we're going to do on the immediate horizon. We will go to the news desk with Don Taylor here in just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. Then we will come back. We'll talk to Mr. David Walker, find out what he's been up to. And I think then we'll roll out that mystery top five to wrap up today's show. So that's all on the horizon. Because our cutoff time is kind of either, A, whenever we get sick of talking or whenever Greg and Sarah show up and need a place to booze. So other than that, we make our own law, friend. It is 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program. 503-505-6964. That is how you can do this. My final observation is, and I think Sarah was the one who actually initially told me this, that when they started bringing in HD at television stations, which they've actually done at the CW, you know, where I did, and you noted that I look a little, I look respectable today. I don't look like myself.
Or as our landlady said, you clean up good.
Yes. And my skin is all one color, and you can't see my internal organs through my pale epidermis. But that's because at the CW, they started filming in HD. And the really great thing was about that, they didn't warn me. I was just sitting there on the set one day getting ready to with the tape Outlook Portland, which is this show I do, and you can find out more about it at outlookportland.com. But I'm doing my notes and I'm whatever, and I see these cameras, and I went, these cameras look weird. Hey, what's with the cameras? They look different. And the guy goes, all right, we're filming in HD starting today. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And then he just goes, and then the red light goes on. I was like, oh, crap. Fine is not how I looked. It looked like Bozo had come in to do my makeup before the show. It was bad. But the makeup they use now for HD, the woman proudly said, is the same makeup they use for burn victims. So there you go. Fantastic. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I believe it's time for a cannibal watch.
Oh, I had no idea you were going to do one so closely after the other. It's time for what?
A cannibal watch.
Here's your cannibal watch for whatever the hell this is. Wednesday, June 23rd. Have a big dinner, have a light snack. If you don't like it, you can't send it back. Just eat it, eat it. Get yourself an egg and beef. Here's Don Taylor with your cannibal watch.
A French prisoner killed his cellmate and devoured his lung after authorities ignored appeals for psychological assistance, he told a court as his trial opened Monday. Nicolas Coquin, 39, he's French, you know. Coquin.
Is it one of those C's where it's got the weird like tail on the bottom?
No, he's got a G in it, so it could just be cocaine. C-O-C-A-I-G-N.
What is his first name?
Nicolas.
Nicky Cocaine. He's going to come by and pay you a visit later.
Nicky Cocaine, 39, told judges in the northern city of Rouen that he had had a long history of mental problems even before he sliced open his victim, ripped out his lung, and fried it on a makeshift stove in their cell. No one was listening to me, the bearded and tattooed detainee told the court. I made several appeals for help, saying I was a man capable of being dangerous. I took action, and then they took me seriously.
I would say that apparently nobody was listening to the guy whose lung was being removed either. Like, a help, hello, help, yeah, yeah. Ow, 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 please stop, please, ow, ow.
Cocaine is charged with killing cellmate Terry Beaudry in January 2007 by punching and kicking him, stabbing him with a pair of scissors, and suffocating him with a rubbish bag. Prosecutors say he sliced open Beaudry's chest with a razor blade, removed a rib, and pulled out an organ, which he at first believed to be the man's heart, but which is, in fact, his lung.
What kind of prison is this?
I was going to say, yeah, like there's no guards. There's like.
But he is said to have eaten part of the lung raw and then fried the rest of it with some onions.
Is this like a, you know, normally in prison here, I think when you go in, they give you like a bar of soap and some pants or something there. It's like you get a stove and a razor blade and a thing to kill a guy with. And
well, what was this makeshift stove made out of? That's what I want to know.
That's a good question.
Because if he made it himself, he was good at that, but not good at killing somebody. Because what you said, he punched, kicked, stabbed, and then suffocated.
Well, he had to get him down first so he could, you know, get at the lung slash. Right. Obviously, he also didn't know much about internal organs because he.
Well, but I mean, to be fair, would you know a lung if I put it in front of, like, if I put it on the. Well, I guess he would know where it came from, though. He'd know, relatively speaking, what part of the body he'd drawn it from. I mean, that's a thing that. I guess that makes some sort of sense. But I just don't. The whole thing about the eating the lung, I don't know why it's always the lung they go for. Because we had this story, I don't know, a while back. One of the best cannibal stories ever was this. I don't want to say it was in Atlanta, but that, I could be making that part up. But it was this guy, it was a rapper named Big Lurch. And he was the rapper of some local note, you know, and I guess what was he doing? He was smoking something laced with something else, like one of those like Art Linkletter films they would show you in high school. But it was like something, something, and PCP and something else. But his name was Big Lurch, and we played some of his music later, and it was awesome. But he went right for the lungs. He like killed the guy, took out the lungs, and when they found him, he was just sort of sitting there, you know, it's like a, you know, like it was a six-incher from Subway or something, just sort of a, how's it going? And it's right into the lung. And
well, they are a good-sized organ. I imagine they would be easy to, like, get your hands on.
I would think they're not as tough, you see. Like, the heart is a tough organ.
Yeah, but isn't a lung like eating ribs or something where it's a disproportionate amount of effort for the amount of payoff you're going to get? You know, it's like corn on the cob.
But,
it's like a
but
lot
you're
of
crazy. You've just smoked PCP, or you're completely nuts, and
or you're just not that hungry.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I mean, I've never really thought about, oh, what would I eat?
Yes, that's you me. Have. That's a lie.
I really have.
That is a lie. You're lying to me. You're lying to me right now.
I've thought about who I would eat, but not what I would eat. How's that?
So you've thought about? Wait, no. But that makes even less sense. When you say you've thought about who you would eat.
Like, you know, like okay, if I was out with all my friends and we were trapped somewhere, who'd be the first one I would kill and
so
eat?
So it's not an infinite pool of possibilities. It's like your circle of friends.
Yeah. I don't think about it in terms of, like, complete strangers. Like, oh, I would cook that person.
Or you're trapped in an elevator and you while away the moments by figuring out which person, if you get trapped and we have to eat each other, who would I eat first?
Exactly.
No, but the answer is always, it's the ass, not in terms of personality, in terms of the body. You go right for the ass. That's it. That's a known fact. That's a scientific fact.
Or children. Children are more tender, and you wouldn't have to cook them as long if you're actually cooking them.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, young animals are more tender. Lamb is
waiting for a moment to play.
Is more tender than mutton.
The Rick Emerson Show, even in this incarnation, is not advocating that you quote eat children because they are more tender. That is an editorial observation protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States and voiced by Don Taylor, not me.
I think if you marinate anything, it would get pretty tender long enough. You marinate it long enough.
But, so. I mean, you end up with a lot of stringy connective tissues the more muscle is used, which is why older animals are tougher and why, you know, you end up stewing older animals. Long, slow-cooking technique to break down the connective tissues.
I didn't know any of this stuff. I'm learning something new right now, and I'm actually kind of freaking out and disturbed. So this is the first time in a long time. Thank you, Don Taylor. You have freaked me out and disturbed me.
Hey, look over there. There's your somewhat ill-advised, now in retrospect, Cannibal Watch for Wednesday. The Rick Emerson Radio Program at the News Desk. This is Don Taylor.
A naked woman in Utah stole a car, crashed it, and hid in the bushes before stealing a police car and driving off with that. A man was standing outside his car in West Valley, Utah, putting up roadside signs at about 5 in the morning on Tuesday. A woman pulled up next to him, jumped out of her car. She was naked. She then hopped into his car and drove off with it. So he got into her car and gave chase, calling the police while he was doing so. Oh, no.
Was the whole thing in like black and white film? And was there like a wrinkly, tinkly piano sound in the background?
So then she missed a turn and crashed the car, jumped out, and took off on foot. A police officer spotted her hiding in a bush. He approached her, and a second officer arrived in his squad car. She refused to surrender, and as the officers struggled with her, she broke away and jumped into the police cruiser and drove off with that.
Wait, is this now car number three that she's in?
This is now car number three. Well, no, this is car number two she's stolen.
I'm so confused. She stole the third car altogether.
Yes, this is the third car altogether.
The chase has now so far involved her being in and driving three different cars.
Right.
This is where the taser thing doesn't make any sense. I thought cops everywhere had been given tasers. I thought they were now just handed out like razors in a French prison.
Oh, we haven't gotten to the taser yet.
Will this become a taser watch?
This could indeed become a taser watch.
All right, hold on. No, see, I was never... I got to get all these things loaded up at the beginning of every show, clearly. No one really warned me that there would be a tasing. All right, so she steals a car. The cop comes and nails her. She jumps out. She gets in car number two, which belongs itself to the cop. They track her down in that. She then...
Well, she was driving the police car. She drove it through a fence, hit a dirt berm when she missed a curve.
She hit a what?
A berm.
You're making that up. I don't know what that is.
You don't know what a berm is? It's like
We didn't all go to finishing school, Don. I don't know what a berm is.
Crucify me.
It's like a mound of earth.
Okay. A hill is what we call that.
Yeah, but it's smaller than a hill. It's a berm.
I'm sorry, I'm not
It's a rise in the earth.
I didn't come from one of your tonier suburbs as a child, so all right.
Well, she hit the big bunch pile of dirt, and then flew about. The car actually was airborne about 50 feet before she crashed into another berm.
Fantastic.
So then she was now slightly bloodied and dirty from being in the bushes.
And naked this whole time,
right? Naked. Fled the ruined squad car and ran off again on foot while two officers chased her. She tried to double back toward the highway, at one point wiggling through a barbed wire fence where there were other officers waiting for her. At which point...
Was Richard Dawson narrating this whole thing?
At which point, an officer stunned her with his taser.
Fantastic. So, I know as I open my mouth to ask this, I'm going to be disappointed because there's not going to be any resolution. This is like the mannequin floating in the boat off Florida, and they said it's mummified, and the mannequin, they never explained why the other day. Why the naked and the running and the doubling back and the who is she and what was she running from?
You know, we thought we would never find out about the watermelon either, and we did.
So maybe tomorrow we'll know.
But it's
impressive. I mean, at this point, by the time she got to the third car and the doubling back, I was rooting for her.
Yeah.
I was rooting for her to escape the man and create a new life for herself.
She was arrested on suspicion of receiving or transferring a stolen vehicle, fleeing, causing property damage, hit and run, obstruction of justice, and lewdness. The police cruiser, worth about $30,000, is a total loss.
Oh, excellent. All right, there you go. The interesting thing about that is, though, all of those charges relate to the pursuit, to her being chased by the cops. In other words, there is no indication what she was doing before this that led her to be nude speeding down the road.
And the story could have actually been even more interesting because the first car she sold, the man who was putting up the roadside signs, he's a concealed weapons permit holder, and his handgun was still in his car.
All right. I'm just
wondering what she looked like. That's all I really care about.
I'm glad you asked that, too, because she's naked, so therefore you want to know. I mean, frankly, you want to know even if she's not.
Yeah.
She'd be dressed in a Glad bag. You probably still want to know. But I was wondering if she was hot.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to wonder that about the girl in the story last hour about the girl who stole the car and then set it on fire and has a history of violence, who will probably be hot when she's legal, but now I can only say would probably be aesthetically pleasing.
I believe a mugshot has been found and added to the... she's not unattractive.
All right, let me...
Now, who's the... Is this the nude woman?
That's the woman who was nude and stole the cars.
She looks like the crows kind of pecked at her a bit, though.
I was going to say,
Well, she had a rough night.
That's true. That's a fair point.
She's got Charlie Manson eyes. Yeah, she doesn't look... there's a bit of helter-skelter running through there, so...
Yeah, I... Yeah, wow. Okay.
There were some great quotes from West Valley Police Captain Tom McLaughlin, who is the one who shared the story with news media. He said, for example, of course, there was no clothing description available.
Of course not. No, there wouldn't be.
On her navigational abilities, one turn she did not even attempt to negotiate.
Fantastic.
When they asked about the status of the police car, he said, I think there's a hubcap that's still usable.
See, this is I'm not going to say that I miss living in Utah, because that would be a falsehood. That would not be true. But I am glad. I view Utah the way that I view Bill Maher and his program on HBO. I don't want to be around either of them because they make my blood pressure skyrocket, but I'm glad they exist. I'm glad Bill Maher's off doing his thing. Don't want to watch it. Makes me angry. Glad he's there. Utah. Don't want to live there. Don't like to go back. Loathe going back. It makes Rick cranky when he has to go back. Glad it's there. You know why? Because of this woman. We'll end this, by the way, as a taser watch.
Okay.
For your Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it!
The middle one that's the most funny.
Don't taste me, bro.
Radio.
It's nice to be back, isn't it?
It really is. I can't tell you how much I've missed that one. I think that is my favorite of all the watch beds. It's just and I can't take any credit for that one either. And it was Mr. Dan Bozek, I believe, who put that together. So, God bless him. All right, David Walker. So what is up with you and your life? So when we last spoke. At the CBS show. So, I was going to try to give some recap of what was going on in your life then, but things get kind of mixed up in my head at this point. But you have, I was going to say a life change, and then that sounds like you're going to be wearing a petticoat or something. But
I am, as a matter of fact. Thanks for noticing.
You have had a moment of self-awareness and a redefining and refocusing of your own existence and purpose.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is, you know, I figured out at some point, hey, I'm never going to have kids of my own. And I should do something to try to make the world a better place by helping kids in some capacity. I should also state that I don't really like kids that much. But that doesn't mean that I shirk away from some semblance of responsibility. So probably the last time we talked, I was running this nonprofit over in North Portland.
Right.
And working with young kids over there. Some people might say at-risk kids. Some people might say underprivileged, whatever. That program got shut down almost a year ago. We're about 2 months short of the year anniversary of that. So I've been sort of floundering and doing all sorts of things, but I'm in the midst of several keen adventures right now, I guess you could call them. I finished writing my first novel, so that's been the big thing, and I'm trying to sell that right now.
Which Fantastic.
Has been like a tremendous uphill battle. I thought the film industry and the music industry was stupid, but apparently the publishing industry is even stupider than either of those.
Now, if I can, because I think this is on, you wrote about this on your website, so I don't think I'm spilling any secrets here, but you wrote, I don't know how much of it is done, but it is the first part of a planned trilogy.
Yeah, I've written the first book. It's a young adult action-adventure novel. The first book is completely done, and so it's been, the feedback from editors and publishers has been, oh, it's, you know, teenage boys don't read. There's no market for this book.
Teenage boys don't read.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I have emails that say teenage boys don't read. It's too dark. It's too violent. Things like that. And so it's just been this, discouraging. But, you know, that hasn't stopped me. So I'm just still plugging away on that one. And right now, I'm actually on the development team for a new charter high school that's opening next year. So I couldn't quite tell you what I'm doing because I don't know what I'm doing every day. I just sort of fake it. There's a lot of faking it.
Welcome to my world, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then just sort of I'm finding myself, Rick. I'm on a spiritual journey to find myself.
You wrote this. You wrote a long essay on your site, which is badassmofo.com, which is Kurt Loder would say. You really ought to check out. And it was a thing about you. You had a moment of. A moment of self-awareness or recognition where you sort of realized that you had, in your own head, stopped. Not that you stopped being a film critic, but it was no longer what you had a burning desire to do. You no longer identified primarily as a film critic.
Yeah, exactly. And that had been like a slow burn to a certain extent. And then, but a couple months back, I just had this situation where the studios wouldn't let me go to a screening, and I thought, why am I trying to do this anymore? I I didn't.
Was
feel
it
that
like
passion.
You personally, or was it an oversight, or did they just go?
No, they were
geez,
like, no,
trouble.
You can't go. They were, you know, it's invite only, and even though you were invited, you're not writing for. You know, every outlet you're writing for is already sending somebody, and we don't want more than one person writing about this movie. And I was like, you got
to
be kidding.
Did you point to this like massive stack of things you've written over the years, the thousands of pages? You're like, look, I write. I've written for years.
There was a time in my life I would have done that, but I was just like, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just one of those things. Like, I just feel like, does anybody really care? Did anybody need, you know, reviews of Jonah Hex to know not to go see it last weekend?
Don Taylor?
No.
Okay, well, there you go.
So, you know, that was just it. I was to this point where it's like, I mean, I'll talk about movies, and I, you know, I haven't talked about movies in weeks on Court and Fab.
I mean, are you just, like, if I can ask you this, because as a guy, you were a film critic, you know, for a long time professionally, and then you did it on your own independently because, mm-hmm. you know, because you have your own sort of brand and it's a thing you loved. But I guess you just wake up one day and just go, God, I hate movies. I just don't ever want to see. I mean, are you just sick of movies, or was that?
I'd been sick of them for a long time. I realized that this past April was my 15th anniversary of being a professional film critic, of getting, like, you know, people actually paying me to write what I thought. And it'd been a buildup over a long time. Right around the holidays of last year was sort of like, I can't remember exactly what movie. I do remember what movie it was. It was The Men Who Stare at Goats. And I went and saw that movie, and I thought, I'm not writing about this movie. I thought it was going to be more entertaining than it was. I was very underwhelmed by it, and I thought, I don't give a shit. That's what I did. So I just didn't write about it, and it sort of snowballed from there. And then it just got to the point where I was like, why am I writing about any of this stuff? But the thing is I would say in the last 3 months maybe, I think I've seen like maybe 4 movies in 3 months, which Don will tell you is like nothing, because when you're doing film criticism, you might watch 2 or 3 movies a day. I mean, at the height of my, you know, career, I was watching on average, I think it was 20 movies a week.
Wow.
And yeah, and so now I don't go to the video store. I'm just reading books, which is like this really odd phenomenon for me. You know,
you feel
like
a whole separate part of your brain powering back up.
Yeah.
Hello, David. We've missed you. Let's read the Canterbury Tales.
Well, I have a friend who's a film critic, and he said once years ago that the worst thing that ever happened to my love of movies was having to see every movie.
Yeah.
And I'm 5 years behind David as a professional film critic. He's got 5 years on me. And I remember when I first started out, David was starting to get kind of embittered and jaded about it. And I remember thinking, oh, poor David. What has happened to him that he's losing his love of movies? And a couple of years ago, it started to happen to me, too. And I was like, I totally know where he's coming from. Where you have that thing where even movies that you know you should be excited about, you just start
You're just not.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Well, and I will say that, pardon me.
There's a point where you've just seen everything, that it's so rare to see a movie that actually offers you anything fresh or anything unusual, because you reach a point where you literally have seen the three-act structure so many times where, you know, they have to hit an action point every 20 minutes and it's the same structure. And it's just genre.
And
you go to see a specific genre, and it's...
There's a joke coming up here, and literally, you can just go, yeah, oh, they're going to try to scare us now.
Right.
Oh, yep, there they go. And then the audience is either they're laughing or they're screaming or they're crying, and you just, like, you begin to resent them, and then you begin to resent the movies, and then at some point you just go, well, wait a minute, it's me.
Right.
Like, I'm the masochist here. I'm the one who keeps coming back for more.
And I should say at this point that, and I am fully aware of this because I've made these same complaints, especially when I was in music radio. When I say music radio, people think of the KUFO incarnation, which certainly had its issues. I mean, there's no lie about that. But I mean, I was just a plain old DJ for many years up until 93, 94. And I will say that I know that, as we say, there's just some guy working in a factory where he puts caps on toothpaste tubes or something. And so, I know these complaints are all very relative, but at the risk of sounding whatever about it, you know, the movies and music, I mean, those are part of the sustenance of life. And I remember being one of the reasons I left music radio, to become a talk show host in 94, was... They were going to fire me eventually because I kept talking too much, and I would babble on, and I would make fun of the right, and I wouldn't take anything seriously, and I'd play some stupid song, and I would, you know, make fun of the band or whatever. And it's not like I was a fearless truth-telling comedian. I was just a jackass. But they wanted, you know, that was fine in 4 second increments. But like, you know, my jackassery was too long winded, and so I was like, I was a walk before they make me run kind of a thing. But also, I used to when I worked in music radio years ago, I was the youngest person at the station. I was like the last hire, so I got stuck with taking tours of kids through the radio station, and they would bring these like seventh graders through the radio station to see the DJs in action, and I would walk them through, and I'm, this is our DJ commissary, this is our, look, it's the rug, look, it's, you know, unfinished ductwork, whatever, and I'm bringing them through, and there would always be one kid in the class that would say, like, well, I want to go into radio, you know, I'm going to be a DJ someday, and whatever, and occasionally, if it seemed like he was a thing he was really into, or he really had the spark, and you could tell he was going to go into radio, if he asked me, you know, about radio, depending on the kid, I would sometimes be more honest than at other times. And I would say to him, I'd say, like, look, here's the thing. First of all, you're going to work forever for no money. There're going to be scores of nights where, as I once said, you know, it's going to be like somewhere around 4 a.m., the clock stops moving, the request lines have stopped ringing, even with drunks and wrong numbers, and you're going to be playing There's a Tear in My Beer by Hank Williams Jr., and you are going to begin to sob uncontrollably, thinking of the ruin you have made of your life and the opportunities for a fruitful existence that you have squandered. So I said, that's going to say you're going to hate your life and your job a lot of times. You're going to get fired repeatedly. You're going to have to move all the time. Your in-laws will never respect you. They will constantly ask whoever you're with when you're going to get a real job somewhere. And worst of all, it seemed to me at the time, and I think probably fairly, is that you're going to lose a lot of the music you love. Because I worked at rock radio stations forever and ever. And working at rock stations, I remember leaving rock radio, it was probably 10 years. And this sounds like a minor complaint until you realize how big a part of all of our lives music is. It was probably 10 years after leaving music radio that I could put on a Led Zeppelin record for enjoyment and actually enjoy it.
And just let it be what it needs to be. I feel that way about film to a certain extent, which is why, like, when I watch a DVD at home, I'm watching one of like 20 movies that I watch all the time.
Right.
Because I know I can just tune it out if I need to. I don't have to write about it, you know. So
you just play, I'll just watch Homicide Season 3 again.
Exactly.
Which is actually what I did when I was unemployed. all right, so to the surprise of no one, we will probably not have time for that top five. Why should this show be any different than like the 900 versions of the show before?
You've been promising that for 2 days.
I know, I suck. I will have to get to one of these two things today, real briefly, before we clear out time for Greg and Sarah. But also, before we do that, what should people do if they want to find it? This is where normally you would pimp, like,
whatever you're
working on. What should people be doing to follow your adventures, David
Just
Walker?
Go to my website, you know, badazzmofo.com, BADAZZMOFO. If you can't remember that, then just the David Walker site should take you right there. You know, everybody's going to, you know, I'm on Facebook. I'm one of those people, so I'm there. And in the next, I'm going to say in the next 2 to 3 months, I'll have some big announcements, and, you know, and I'll, whenever you, if my schedule works out, I'll come back whenever, and I'll talk about, you know, I've got all sorts of interesting theories percolating in my head. So
excellent. Well, we will,
I'm going to, for my, studio warming gift, I'll bring you a more comfortable chair because my butt is very sore.
That's so, Sarah. Let me just say, at the risk of starting a whole thing, I'm just going to say this real briefly. I didn't order. I suggested what I thought was a whimsical sort of fun adventure for everybody, because it's Dawn and myself and Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon, and then our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, who helps to keep me moderately organized and on schedule. And so there's, you know, five of us, basically. And I had what I thought was a really fun idea. I said, hey, and everybody can buy their own chair. Because who doesn't love buying office supplies?
Actually, what you said is, I decided everyone's buying their own chair.
That doesn't sound like me. That sounds unduly harsh. So I bought a chair, and I love it, and it's great. That I think that is the
and
chair.
And I brought my chair from home.
And the funny thing is, Sarah brought a chair, but she doesn't use it. She uses yours. So my plan fell apart almost immediately. I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be like getting to pick out like your own hat at a party.
Cheryl in the text box says, it's not whimsical. We want nice chairs.
All right, well, I'm doing the best I can over here. I was going to make some... anyway, I had one of two things that I was going to try to get to real briefly here. I have either an abbreviated version of this makeup mishap, which I've been throwing, which isn't actually really going to be that funny. It's just that I was talking to, I teased it at the top of the show, and then we got sidetracked. So I was doing Outlook Portland.
You promised the top five, too. That's not happening.
I was at Outlook Portland. You guys know who Bill Carter is? Not the New York Times writer, but the guy who did Miss Sarajevo?
Yes.
So Bill Card, he wrote a book called Fools Rush In and another one called Red Summer, and he made the movie Miss Sarajevo. Essentially, he... Long story short, Greg and Sarah interviewed him too, but just an amazing guy. A guy where you interview him and you feel like a loser in like 100 ways. His girlfriend died very unexpectedly and tragically, so he just went off and hitchhiked around the world to kind of find himself, ended up in Croatia, and he was there right as everything was just going bad in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and he was in Sarajevo. He was nobody, no money, no connections. He was literally just some guy off the street. Ended up being in Sarajevo, and the end of the story is that he engineered... this feat where he somehow got a hold of Bono, like in person. And Bono, for 15 consecutive nights on the Zoo TV tour, let the people of Sarajevo address the whole world, like 50,000 people at a time. And I got my issues with U2, but it was pretty awesome in a lot of ways. And he didn't know, he pretended to be both the manager of and the employee at this tiny Sarajevo radio station, which is really just like a guy with a shortwave. And he was like, well, he would send these faxes off that he had to do through 9 different parties. And he would say, well, if I leave the building, you know, I'll be taken prisoner. But our foreign correspondent, Bill Carter, is here. And so he was totally engineering this whole thing. And so I talked to him, and he talked about surviving these, bombings in Sarajevo. And I'm listening to this guy go speak. God, I'm a loser. I am just, I am just full of failure. And I knew all of this as I'm talking to him before the taping this morning. We're in the green room, and he's like a good-looking guy, and he's got Bono's number on his cell. And it's like, well, we talk a couple times a week, 18 years later. And every so often, when they finally did play Sarajevo to 50,000 people, me and my friends who survived the war, we were in the front row. And it's like he's talking about, it's like he's Hemingway talking about landing a Marlin before going off, to fight in the Spanish-American War. And I'm trying to look all cool in front of him, and you already know how that's going to work out. And so I'm there, and I'm already looking much like a girl because I've got this huge bag of makeup I carry with me to the television station. Hi, because I'm a vain dick. And I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, yeah, well, I'd probably do something like that, but I have to be here, Bill Carter, to bring the news to the people via the Gossip Girl Network where I do the show. And otherwise, I thought about going over to – and I zip open my makeup bag. And I don't know if you ladies and not a few gents – know about Bare Essentials, which is apparently a new kind of makeup that has supplanted the popular MAC makeup. Here's the thing about this makeup. It's all you need to know is that it's not pressed like in a compact. It's just a very fine powder. It's like talcum powder, like baby powder. The other thing about it is the lid comes off pretty easily. Also, it comes off in your makeup bag. Also, it comes off in your makeup bag and fills the entire thing with a fine beige mist. Also, when I'm trying to impress Bill Carter and I go, so anyway, zip. And then, like, the weird vacuum effect of the air, just this cloud of beige makeup came out. And then I inhaled it, and then I had this whole coughing and sneezing fit. And he said, what's that? And I go, I just inhaled a bunch of my makeup. I'm sorry. And then I had to rush out of the room because my eyes were watering. Fail. There you go. Wasn't that amusing?
That was a beautiful moment. That really was.
All right. Tomorrow we'll talk about this assisted tours, I think, because I've got questions. Everybody else will have answers. BadassMofo.com is the website, or the David Walker site. .com. Don Taylor, you can be reached online at hamfistedradio.com, among other places.
Hamfistedradio.com. And by the way, that will be on today on PDX FM over there at 4 o'clock. So I'll be hopping over there forthwith.
Excellent. Fantabulous. So that is all coming up. The Rick Emerson Show is produced today and every day by all of us. It's a collective effort and made possible by a generous grant from you. And we are coming to you live, as always, from high atop the Milk Packing District in beautiful Southeast Portland, from the hallways of the Emerson News Network. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor. Thanks to our special guest, David Walker. Tomorrow, the Oregonian's Christy Turnquist. As always, our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. You can reach us online, rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Please spread the word. Thank you for listening. My name is Rick Emerson. This is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2010. And that is The Frequency, Kenneth. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.